Now from the KSFR Newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Thursday, October 24th.
The Santa Fe County Commission decides Tuesday on its choice to replace the late State Representative Stephen Easley in District 50. The county commissions in the sprawling district are each to send a nomination for Governor Martinez to choose from. Meantime, the Bernalillo County Commission voted Tuesday to nominate Ann Jenkins of El Dorado, a Democrat, as its choice. Bernalillo County Commissioner Maggie Hart Stebbins was among the 3-2 majority voting for Jenkins.
She had a good understanding of, you know, the late Representative Easley's priorities and the good work that he'd done while he was in the legislature.
Governor Martinez will choose among the county nominees. The Workforce Solutions Department, which runs New Mexico's unemployment insurance program, is requesting another $11 million to handle its workload. The Albuquerque Journal reports the agency says more business owners and unemployed workers are using its new federally financed computer system and that it needs to offset a decrease in federal funding. Some $8 million of the total request would be used to keep the system up and operating. With Wednesday's arguments both for and against marriage equality made before the state Supreme Court, the wait is on for the justices' decision. The High Court is not bound to a timetable, and thus an announcement could come at any time. Meanwhile, Republican State Senator William Scherer, a leading voice against same-sex marriage, says New Mexico voters have the final say, regardless of the legal decision.
Until they're satisfied that the right decision's been made, this issue is not settled, no matter what they choose to do today.
State Senator William Scherer. Bullying, mental health issues, and gun violence in schools are the focus of today's Safe School Summit in Albuquerque, sponsored by Attorney General Gary King. The event is expected to draw school administrators, teachers, parents, and students, as well as law enforcement officials. The nationally renowned bully coach and author Dr. Joel Haber is the keynote speaker at the event. The New Mexico court's share of traffic ticket revenue will be cut in the next fiscal year because the Taxation and Revenue Department gave them too great a share in the previous fiscal period. The Legislative Finance Committee says the department has notified the Administrative Office of the courts that in fiscal year 2013, it credited the courts for revenue that should have gone to cities. The department is fixing the error by reducing the amounts for this year by an as-yet-unspecified sum. The New Mexico Public Education Department, in concert with major nonprofit groups, has distributed some 200 backpacks to students in 39 school districts statewide. It's the sixth annual such distribution in partnership with the Feed the Children organization. In that time, thousands of school children in the state classified as homeless have received more than 10,000 backpacks filled with ready-to-eat meals, hygiene products, and age-appropriate books. A heads up to motorists along I-25 both today and tomorrow. The Department of Transportation will have a right lane closure for southbound traffic at La Bajada as road crews perform shoulder stabilization work. The closure will be in effect from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Speed limit will be reduced to 55. Santa Fe County is weighing its options for the future of the old district courthouse. The New Mexican reports that the county has been presented several choices for the building, vacant since the new courthouse opened in June, that include selling the downtown edifice, using it for parking, or expanding and leasing it. However, given the low demand for office space downtown, another option, using it for county offices, may be the likely choice. New Mexico Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham has introduced the Veterans Independent Living Enhancement Act that would help disabled veterans living independently and participate in family and community life. Lujan Grisham says the bill removes an arbitrary cap on the number of veterans eligible to participate. The program provides services to maximize independence and daily living for veterans who are disabled. Lujan Grisham says the bill has bipartisan support. Weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny and warm today ahead of some unsettled weather arriving tonight. Meteorologist Todd Shoemake with the National Weather Service in Albuquerque gives us the details.
Some changes on the way. We'll start to see some showers crop up towards this evening and through the overnight around the Santa Fe area. We are looking for cooler temperatures to eventually kind of work into the area Friday and more so into Friday night. snow levels are going to remain fairly high. So as far as any impacts from snow accumulations, I think those are going to be relegated to pretty high elevations, generally about 9,000 to 9,500 feet and above.
I'm Tom Trowbridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, all the major indices in positive territory. The Dow is up 89 points at 15,502, the NASDAQ up 19 at 3,926, and the S&P 500 up 4 points at 1,750. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. 50 years ago this month, the world's then three leading superpowers, the former Soviet Union, the United Kingdom, and the United States, established a limited nuclear test ban treaty. It was a pledge that no signatory nation would engage in nuclear weapons testing in the atmosphere, underwater, or in space. To provide U.S. verification of compliance, our nearby Los Alamos National Laboratory provided sensor technology that was launched into space. Joining us now to talk more about LANL's involvement in such activities, both then and now, is Herbert Funston, Chief Scientist for the Division Overseeing Space Missions. Herb, can you speak to LANL's role in the events of 50 years ago?
Absolutely, yeah. And I'll start a little bit earlier. Los Alamos actually had the first inklings of space in 1959, which was fairly soon after the Explorer program was launched and the radiation belts were discovered. And we had a series of instruments on what evolved into NASA missions and also some Air Force missions trying to understand the Earth space environment. So once the limited test ban treaty was signed, it was fairly natural for Los Alamos to have some radiation detection instruments to help monitor the treaty. And just to kind of put it into context, there was a what preceded this treaty was a mutual volunteer ban on detonations in the atmosphere and space. And Russia, after less than a year, responded with some very, very big nuclear weapons tests, and some of them were in space. So it kind of rattled us, and we responded with similar types of tests. And I think that rattled the Soviet Union, and the treaty was executed fairly soon, and Los Alamos played a prominent role in trying to verify the treaty. We also do it from the ground. We do seismic monitoring of nuclear weapons tests, and that mission continues to this day also.
And those space-based monitoring systems are still employed, yes?
Yes, there's both the space-based and the ground-based. And the space-based mission, for example, we have instruments on the Global Positioning System, or the GPS, series of satellites that measures electromagnetic waves, kind of like radio waves that are given off from a nuclear weapon, and also radiation environment types of sensors, because the radiation environment is harsh, and there's geomagnetic storms. And we need to understand what are the instruments telling us, even though there might be a geomagnetic storm occurring at the same time. So we need to understand with as much precision and accuracy as we can, even though nature might be sending us a curveball.
And over these past 50 years, has there been an instance of sensors detecting evidence of something that might represent a violation of the weapons testing ban?
So that's a great question. So we love to be the Maytag repairman. We like we like times when nothing actually occurs and we don't detect anything. Life is good when all is quiet for this program. Nevertheless, there was an incident over the Indian Ocean off of South Africa, and that's called the Vela incident in 1979. There was apparently a detected event. The laboratory and our colleagues at Sandia strongly believe that it was a nuclear detonation. It's not clear that the Carter administration liked that result, and there was an academic panel that came out with a different result that it was unlikely a test. Well, it turns out in 1997, the deputy foreign minister for South Africa disclosed that that event was actually a nuclear test done with the support of Israel. So there was a detected event, and there was a very deep analysis that was performed for it, and it turns out the laboratory assessment was correct.
And apart from this monitoring effort, LANL's contribution to space exploration has vastly expanded. Among recent ongoing examples is the Mars Curiosity rover, which features a very important analytical tool, the ChemCam instrument. That is an invention of LANL, is it not? And an outgrowth of the monitoring mission we've been talking about?
Absolutely, that's correct. And that started out of our analysis of soil samples, looking for things like waste samples from other DOE facilities that have since closed, and trying to understand soils and also trying to detect high explosives. So there's a very broad mission for that type of detection technology, and we honed it for use at a planet. And there's been just some exciting results from that. The most recent of which is that we have definitive proof of water exposure of the soils of Mars. So there's lots of evidence that Mars used to be very wet or a very damp environment, and we found definitive proof of that through the ChemCam instrument.
The lab's participation in increasing our knowledge both of the inner and outer space is very significant. Where can interested parties go to get more information?
So the Los Alamos website, www.lanl.gov, I believe, has quite a bit of information about our 50 years, and it expands a lot on the other missions that we have. And so great information there. And I just want to emphasize that Los Alamos does a lot of fantastic science, but it's also helping to keep the world safe.
Scientist Herbert Funston at our Los Alamos National Laboratory, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
The Lenzic proudly presents Fritz Lang's Metropolis with a live soundtrack performed by Alloy Orchestra on Tuesday, October 29th at 7 p.m. The complete, recently restored version of the 1927 science fiction classic comes to life with the dramatic music and sound effects of Alloy Orchestra this Halloween week. For tickets, call 988-1234 or visit TicketSantaFe.org. The Lenzic is a nonprofit, member-supported organization.
18 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. The chairman of the New Mexico State Senate Public Affairs Committee is hopeful that a bill seeking to assist soon-to-be-released jail and prison inmates in New Mexico will be revisited. Rejoining us here at the news desk is KSFR's Tom Trowbridge. Tom, tell us exactly, what does this legislation do?
Dan, it would allow the prisons and jails to have inmates about to be released apply for the state's Medicaid program.
Now, this was an idea that was attempted last year, correct?
Yes, indeed, and you'll hear details now in my report.
During the last legislative session, Governor Martinez vetoed the bill sponsored by State Senator Jerry Ortiz Pino that sought to both reduce prisoner recidivism and benefit the newly freed inmates. But Ortiz Pino, a Bernalillo County Democrat, tells KSFR he plans to try again. He defines the problem.
What we see happening now is upon release, you know, they're sober in the jail. Some of them may even get methadone or Suboxone while they're in jail. That happens here in Albuquerque. But upon release, if they don't have a way to pay for it, they may go in and apply for Medicaid to try to get covered. Well, a lot of them won't be eligible for Medicaid currently. And even if they are eligible, it may take 2, 3, 4 weeks to determine that. And in that period, the chances of their relapse are very great. And a lot of them recidivate during that period. They start using again. They start drinking again. They get into trouble, and they wind up back in the jail.
Ortiz Pino says his proposal would take advantage of the new expanded Medicaid eligibility guidelines.
Right now, very few of them would actually be eligible for Medicaid, because our eligibility levels are so low in New Mexico. But starting January 1st with Obamacare and the expanded Medicaid program that Governor Martinez agreed to participate in, that goes up to, the eligibility level goes up from the current 30% of poverty to 38% of poverty, which means that the vast majority of guys coming out of jail would be eligible for Medicaid.
Ortizi Pino says the point of the bill considered last year was to ensure that the inmates who served their sentences would have Medicaid coverage on day one of their freedom. That means the former inmates could get treatment they needed and make them less likely to return behind bars.
What good is it to, for society to keep somebody in there for several years and then within days of their release, they commit another crime and wind up right back in? And we have to go through all the expense of readmitting them and dealing with them yet again.
The senator says during this year's legislative session, he worked to accommodate concerns from both sides of the aisle.
We actually overcame many objections. We changed the bill. We amended it several times to strengthen it, to deal with some of the objections that had been raised. And ultimately, with the strong support from the Association of Counties, it passed both houses by, I think there may have been one or two votes against it, but not many more than that, if at all. But unfortunately, when it got to the governor's desk, she chose to veto it.
And what was the reason given for the governor's veto?
She said it was not necessary, that they could do it by administrative action, and that she had directed the Secretary of the Human Services Department, which runs Medicaid, to work with the Corrections Secretary to get it started. Well, that's all well and good, except that if the administration or when the administration changes, that goes out the window if you don't have a legal basis for what you're doing, if you're just doing it by administrative action. And secondly, it doesn't deal with the counties at all. It deals with the prisons, but the county jails would not be able to have this happen there.
However, Ortizi Pino says legislators were seeking something more far-reaching than an administrative action.
The other objection, she said, is that it was going to be very, very expensive to do this. And that left all of us scratching our heads. First of all, it shouldn't be very expensive at all. I mean, all you need is a computer, a terminal that can access the state's Aspen system, and you can determine eligibility. You can't start services while they're in jail. That's a federal rule. But you could determine their eligibility and have it all ready to go so that on the day they left, just pushed a button and it was done.
The Democrat says the Association of Counties is working to encourage the governor to support the Medicaid for Freed Inmates bill during the 2014 legislative session. However, because the session is constitutionally limited to state budgetary items, the governor will need to put the matter on her call for lawmakers to consider. Ortizi Pino says the bill makes too much sense and had too much legislative support to simply drop.
If she won't give us a message because it's a budget session, we probably won't be able to discuss it until the next 60-day session in another year after this January.
For KSFR, I'm Tom Tropridge.
Support comes from Bookworks, an independent bookseller in Albuquerque for nearly 30 years. This fall, Bookworks hosts a number of writers, including Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation and The New Nuclear History, Command and Control, Terry McMillan, author of How Stella Got Her Groove Back and the new novel, Who Asked You, Andrew Solomon, author of Far From the Tree, and poet Nikki Giovanni. Info and tickets online at bkwrks.com or call 344-8139.
24 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Saturday, October 26th, there will be a prescription drug take-back day. This is the second such event this year. Joining us now is Peter Olson, who is with Santa Fe County DWI Prevention. Peter, is this program just for Santa Feans?
This is actually a nationwide campaign organized by the Drug Enforcement Administration, and we do have locations statewide, and Santa Fe County in particular, we've got lots of locations.
What was the result of the first two drug take-back days?
These drug take-back days are very successful. In the last two, this past April and then about a year ago in September, between those two, we've collected over 1,700 pounds of prescription medication that people don't want in their medicine cabinet any longer.
Does anyone check what medicines are actually being turned in?
We don't ask any questions. This is completely anonymous. People can throw whatever medication they don't want to keep, they don't want to have around in our collection boxes, and we don't ask questions, we don't look at the labels. You can dump the pills in by themselves and take your bottles home, or you could dump the bottles in the collection box. Whatever you want, no questions, we don't look at it, we just collect it.
And there is, of course, a major concern that these drugs are getting into the hands of people, including our teenagers, looking for a high, correct?
We do know that one of the easiest ways for people, especially kids, to get medication that they use recreationally or to self-medicate is in the medicine cabinet. And we all know people who've had pain medication, surgery, whatever it is, and they've got a few pills sitting around in their cabinet, and an enticingly easy way for people to get access to this. And what we're trying to do is obviously remove that temptation and remove that possibility of addiction to these pain pills that are just sitting there in your medicine cabinet being unused.
What's the fate of the medications that are collected?
The Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, comes around and collects all of the medication that we collect, that we pick up, and they take it to their secure facility until they can transport it to a destruction facility, usually in Phoenix, where they incinerate it.
And where can people leave off their unwanted medications?
We do have 5 locations in Santa Fe County, in Edgewood at the Smith's Grocery Store, in Santa Fe at the Albertsons on Zafferano, and the Albertsons at the Vargas Mall, and then the old Walmart on Cerrillos Road, and then at the Pewaukee Fire Station in Pewaukee, and then at the Agora Shopping Center in El Dorado at the pharmacy.
And Peter, tell us again when the event is being held.
We will be collecting unused and unwanted medication from your medicine cabinet on Saturday, October 26th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Drop by and drop off your unwanted, unused medication. I think that anybody and everybody should go through their medicine cabinet and find what they're not using, what they don't have an active prescription for, and reduce the temptation, just get rid of it quick and easy and simple with no questions asked.
Peter Olson with Santa Fe County, many thanks for joining us here at Noon.
Support comes from Mountain Cloud Zen Center in Santa Fe, where there's no need to don robes or shave heads. The miracle of everyday life, that's where real awakening happens, in the midst of ordinary lives. A taste of the deep, clear peace of authentic Zen can be found at Mountain Cloud Zen Center. Thursday night talks and Sunday morning practice with resident Zen teacher Henry Shookman. Everyone always welcome. Learn more at mountaincloud.org.
29 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. There's a new trend in pharmacies that reaches back to the early days of medical practice. Here now is KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
In the olden days, when pharmacies first appeared, the pharmacists didn't have access to many commercial drugs and had to make medications themselves. That practice has reappeared today and is known as pharmacy compounding. Brianna Herrand is a compounding pharmacist here in Santa Fe.
Our pharmacy is a regular, retail pharmacy, as in that you can get any commercially available drug product, but the other section of our pharmacy is compounding, and basically the definition of compounding is that we make something that is not commercially available for the patient, whether it's changing or modifying the dosage form or actually making up a preparation of a drug that isn't maybe commercially made anymore at all, but we can purchase the raw materials. And so compounding is really just kind of a generalized term for making some kind of prescription preparation that's tailored to an individual specific need.
There are a number of medicines that can be compounded.
I would say that one of the most common things that we compound are topical creams. And the reason why is because the skin is really a good way to deliver drugs to the system if you can't take drugs by mouth or pretty much any other way. So they can they can try to make up preparations that we put in a specific base that go through the skin. So topicals are probably the most common things we compound, and those can be anything from pain creams to hormones to anti-nausea medicines. Then the next most common thing we compound is, I would say, we try to turn oral dosage forms like tablets and capsules into solutions or suspensions for kids who maybe can't take things by mouth. And so that's probably the next most common thing that we do. And we have several patients that are our younger patients that are our kids that we try to work closely with their doctors to make sure that they're getting the best possible treatment that they can get, even though what they need and how they need it might not be commercially or readily available.
They can even compound medications for the furrier members of our family.
Pets are definitely a part of our family, and so it's really important to make sure that they're getting taken care of too. And obviously, a lot of veterinarians have many pet-specific meds already for their animals to use, but there's some things that aren't commercially available for animals. And so that's when vets give us a call and ask us to maybe make up something more specific for the animals. And we've done the typical animal compounds for cats and dogs. I think that that's what most people think of when they think of pets. But we've also made stuff for horses. We've made stuff for birds. We've made stuff for pretty rare exotic animals that need medicine as well.
Although insurance does not often pay for the cost of a compounded drug, that doesn't mean they'll always be more expensive.
In terms of cost and how they relate to the commercially available product, it's really going to depend on the specific compound itself. And I know that that's kind of like not really that great of an answer, but it's the honest truth. And some things are much, much more affordable. The first one that pops into my mind is hormones like testosterone and progesterone. So there are commercially available products of those two hormones on the market. They just so happen to be brand name only, which means they are still under their drug patent and their proprietary drugs, but we can compound similar things, not identical, not the same thing, for a fraction of the cost.
Brianna Herrand of Santa Fe.
It's a great, great tool to have and a great resource to use if you want your patients to be on something like a compound or they need to be on something like a compound. And my only suggestion is that if nobody knows what compounding is about or anything like that, they can just call us and we can, you know, basically go over what they would need.
To find a compounding pharmacy near you, simply look in the phone book or online. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:34 currently in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is once again the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Having things wrong with you can be challenging, debilitating, frustrating, etc. But at the same time, on another level, the problems can be a learning experience. For several years, I've looked for an alternative to spinal surgery. I recently saw a new doctor. I was optimistic until the doctor walked into the room and started talking and talking and talking about how good her methods were. Every now and then, I would forcibly interject a sentence or two. Then the doctor's monologue moved to cleansing my body of toxins like heavy metals. My radar started beeping. Then the word chelation. The radar's beeping got louder. Doc wanted me to send a urine sample along with $60 to an analysis clinic in Illinois. I looked up the clinic, sued several times by clients for fraud. Now, I'm not accusing anyone, but I wonder what that makes the doctor. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's Extended Noon News Hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Tom Trowbridge and Charles Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you, and as always, we hope you join us.